Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
How can you transform your work environment from frustrating and lifeless to engaging and inspiring? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about a framework for driving results, inspiring your employees, and transforming your workplace. But first, if you want leadership tips from the world's top gurus, if you want to learn to become a great boss, if you want to get promoted faster, visit leadx.org. Actionable tips from the world's top experts. So I'm excited. Our guest today is a friend. He is a speaker, executive consultant, the founder and CEO of the Purposeful Culture Group. He's one of Inc. Magazine's top 100 leadership speakers and was featured at South by Southwest as a presenter. He's the author of The Culture Engine, a framework for driving results, inspiring your employees, and transforming your workplace. Our guest, of course, is Chris Edmonds. Chris, welcome to the show.
Kevin, delighted to get a chance to talk with you and your audience about culture. And again, we always love an excuse to talk together. So here we are.
Exactly. Any excuse is a good excuse.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about the culture engine in just a minute. But Chris, start us off and tell us a story about a time when you actually failed, early in your career. What'd you learn from it? What can we learn from your pain?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the biggest challenges that I faced was in my YMCA days. I was a YMCA executive for 15 years, and it's where I was truly exposed to, you know, okay bosses, a couple of really outstanding, fabulous, great bosses, one of which I dedicate quite a section of themes in the Culture Engine to, a guy named Jerry Netter, and one world-class, really awful boss. And what I was learning as I was literally learning how to lead, And I was kind of following an okay boss, and I had a very interesting scenario. I went into an organization, to a Y that had a very, 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 very strong staff, very strong programs. And I thought, I don't have to do much here, right? I'm 28, right? And I'm thinking I'll be able to learn a bunch and whatnot. And the dynamics were fascinating. A longtime player left the organization. It was kind of the founder and really the boss that really molded this leadership team and these staff, and I inherited all of this. But of course, the dynamics of somebody like that leaving, there's always hurt feelings, right? There's, I wish X happened, I wish Z happened. So I had a woman who was running the pool side and was brilliant, but her attitude was awful. Her attitude was terrible. And she was such a visible figure that even rolling her eyes would impact half the staff, right? Because they'd notice it, and then they'd look at each other, and it's like, I either got to kidnap this woman, right, for 6 months or whatever. So, and she was probably 24, 25, out of school. So I did the, you know, we need to talk. Right. And I came at her and said, you've got such a crappy attitude. I used more illustrative language than that.
Yeah.
And kind of said, the attitude is visible. This isn't going to work. This is not a problem between you and me, except I'm seeing the impact you're having on the staff. And immediately she got up and she left the office. Soon as I said the poop word, she left the office. And I thought, that didn't go as I planned at all. That was not. And, you know, came back, you know, with my boss and really said, you know, I don't care what the issue is with me, the language is not appropriate. And I thought, I'm in a young men's Christian organization. First of all, it wasn't all young. It wasn't all men. And we certainly had a variety of religious affiliations with people there. But I thought, that was a pretty stupid move to try and inspire this woman by cussing. Right. So that is the one that still hangs there. And there's so many great different ways that I could have done that. I didn't do it.
Yeah, no, that's a really important story. And of course, you were a young man at the time, and that lesson has stuck all this time, huh?
It still burns me ever so slightly. and again, it gets to the relationship kind of foundation. If you got trust and respect, you can really tell anybody anything. Right. I clearly didn't have that.
Yeah, no, that's an important takeaway. So, Chris, your book is The Culture Engine, and you say the foundation of high performance and values alignment is an organizational constitution. So what do you mean by that exactly? What's an organizational constitution?
So what's really cool is that as soon as I say organizational constitution, I get heads nodding, even around the globe. As I'm doing keynotes on this work, I get head nodding. So we can go back to the English and the Magna Carta, right, to kind of look at that. But the idea of a constitution is pretty well known. So I don't have to do a whole lot of explanation. Right. But saying an organizational constitution, well, what do you mean? I know that if we have a constitution, it means we have rules and we're supposed to abide by them. I said, that's exactly where we're going. The thing that an organizational constitution does, and this is really my mantra. I tell leaders all the time, you know, fabulous investment of time and energy and managing performance. Good for you. I know that you are incented and rewarded to do that. But that's only half the leader's job. And of course, most of the leaders will go, that's only half the job. There must be something right. I'm missing. Well, yes. And it's managed. The other half of the job is managing the quality of the workplace. It's how are people treating each other? So what an organizational constitution does is it formalizes rules for civility and sanity. It really does. So the big kickoff is a servant purpose, which is a purpose statement beyond making money. It's who are you serving and why is that going to be actually inspiring and potentially meaningful to your staff? The second piece is values and behaviors, which we'll talk a little bit more about, but it's really literally defining what a good citizen does, how a good citizen treats peers, bosses, customers, vendors, right, suppliers. Right. We're going to create liberating rules, but they're rules nonetheless that say, I'm going to treat people civilly. I'm going to validate people's ideas. Those behaviors then guide the treatment of others. And then, of course, we have to include the formalizing of performance expectations in the form of strategies and goals. So what a constitution does is it validates the strategies and goals. There's no question we have to perform well, but it creates almost on an equal footing that we're actually going to be nice to each other.
So the organizational constitution, it's written up, it applies to the entire organization. Let's talk about the goals piece. Would an organization typically just do this a year at a time? Here's the goals for the year, or is it like the 5-year plan kind of thing?
Great question, because what I really do, and as I engage with senior leadership teams and senior leaders of small businesses, multinationals, everything in betwixt, is that you've got to have a clear demand of what are we doing this for? Why are we doing this? Why are we engaged in a conversation about values when everything our board wants, right? Everything our stakeholders want, it's all about performance. And the reality is, yes, goals are critically important. And yet, what I find in nearly every organization I go into is that they feel like they're not as consistently holding people accountable for performance expectations. So there's the, yes, we have clear goals. Yes, they're done, be it annually, be it semi-annually, what have you. But the accountability is the key part. What's interesting about an organizational constitution is if there's a cycle of annual updating of goals, strategies, right, market opportunities, what have you, that's a pretty good cycle. Once we get the values and behaviors set and the servant purpose set, it's unlikely that those behaviors are going to need to be changed more than once in a 2 or 3 year period. And what I really help leaders realize is, first of all, it's going to take us all a while as humans to kind of embrace this new way of operating with each other. And so we need to have those behaviors set for a couple of years. And yes, you may have goals be updated and strategies be updated on an annual basis or sometimes even faster. I have no clients looking at a 5-year strategic plan anymore. It's much, much more frequent than that. For me, I'm not a strategic planning player. I'm a culture player. So I'm not going to come in and go, oh, that strategy is really dumb, or you should refine it more quickly. They've got the business savviness to really understand how to manage their performance opportunities, right? Their results opportunities. But I tell them that maybe in a couple of years, you're going to find some new behaviors you need to add because you're expanding, right?
Right.
Or there's an acquisition that happens. And now you need to get clearer about, you know, maybe some different behaviors that are challenges now. They weren't challenges 2 years ago.
So let me, I want to, you've a couple times talked about this focus on performance or only measuring performance. And, you know, I myself kind of learned when I was younger and dumber.
And running companies.
I mean, I was really I won some Great Place to Work awards and all that. And we were getting results. We were doubling or more, you know, our revenue a year. I thought I was a genius because I had customer teams and each team leader was paid a lot of commission based on project profit. So we were all aligned, blah, blah, blah. I ended up with some problems down the road, but I want to hear why you say, like, you can have a big problem if you're only measuring performance, only measuring results. And I think that's our default nature as type A management drivers. I'm promoted to kick some butt, perform, perform, perform. So what's wrong with that?
Well, it gets to this kind of mantra about, you know, managing performance, good for you. That's half your job. And the reality, though, is that most leaders have never been asked to manage culture, right? Mm-hmm. If they discover that there's something wrong with the culture, say it's an engagement survey and they get bad news, what are they supposed to do to fix it? They have no idea. Yet our default view and role models are much, much, much more powerful today and have been for, you know, let's face it, since probably the 40s, much more focused upon leadership is about managing results. They're incented to manage results. Their goals are all results driven. So we've crafted this leadership set of responsibilities that fall exclusively on the managing performance side. Now, the problem comes when we start to look at, well, if we're focused on performance and we're focused on results and we have a compensation recognition reward system that is focused upon individual accomplishment, we have just set up the classic I win, you lose kind of dynamic. And it means that I can today, if I'm a senior leader, if I'm a salesperson, if whatever my role is, I know exactly what a good job looks like. And if me getting that good job done from a result standpoint means that maybe I inhibit information you might need, or I'm not as proactive in helping you when you kind of shoot up the flare, right?
Right.
Then my focus is upon my winning today. And tomorrow we start the battle again. And what happens is we get bending of the rules. We get interpretation of the rules that can be unfair, maybe to customers, maybe to other team members. But if we look to crafting a workplace where people actually share information, work to be more efficient, more effective, to be innovative in solutions, then this individual lone ranger out there working independently isn't the way to leverage our learning. It isn't the way to leverage our brain cells.
Right.
And worse, is it doesn't help us leverage our hearts. If we've got people that are passionate about what they're doing in the workplace, we'd get a lot, lot farther, a lot, lot faster if we can actually have them feel like they're working in an environment where their opinions are validated, where their contributions are part of a whole as well as individual. I have nothing against individual compensation, but balance that with team success is right. One way of them getting compensation or organizational success. And I know you saw this as you were managing your businesses. I have every leader tell me the drama drives me crazy.
Right,
and
right.
it's the people are not nice to each other. They say terrible things about each other. Now they post them on Snapchat, et cetera, right? And it's like, well, they're gone in 24 hours, but it's still ugly. And the reality is that if leaders focus exclusively on performance, they are actually capping the ability of that business to succeed. And I know that's a bold statement, but what I found with organizations that embrace this idea of, instead of just being productive, can we be purposeful and positive and productive. What happens is, and this is typically, this is a longer term consultative process and it takes some focus. I'm going to have to break habits, right, that leaders have. Leaders are going to have to break their own habits as well. But in 18 months plus, we typically see 40% gains in employee engagement, 40% gains in customer service, and 30 to 35% gains in results and profits. Now, you hang a 30% gain in results and profits out to senior leaders, oh yeah, they'll pay attention.
As well they should. I mean, that's really remarkable. And that's, I mean, again, unfortunately, I learned that lesson, you know, sort of late. I learned, okay, half of it, as you say, it's what are the results that you got? And then how did you get them? And, you know, did the how did you get those results fit within the culture and the values? And LeadX listeners, I mean, in my case, where I really experienced this and it sank in is while I was highly compensating the team leaders and I was allocating the clients. So I thought, there's not competition. They have their own clients, their own teams, and I'm paying for performance. And by the way, the company, the holding company, and my bosses were paying me only for performance. I only had
exactly
one metric as well.
Yep.
But what happened was we were growing fast, and the revenue was growing faster than our ability to hire and deliver. And as soon as that stressor came in, what happened was one of my team leaders started to do things like, you know, steal other people's resources and lobby to get people to leave one team and to come to her team or.
Exactly. Cause it was going to help her succeed.
Exactly.
And beat everybody else.
Exactly right. So, and in the short term, I think that this focus on performance in the very short term, you can have some success with it. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to build anything lasting, not to mention, as you say, just have a heart and be human, but that second piece. And over time, what eventually happened was the tension and everything got to the point where, you know, I had to intervene. I had to, you know, referee and do all those things that aren't fun. And this person ended up leaving my firm and stealing the clients with her. So
that
was the ultimate lesson to me, right? So because I didn't enforce the, well, that's great results, but how did you get those results?
Yeah.
It was me all the way out the door. I mean, it was really something to see.
Well, and what I'm convinced of is that all leaders are doing the best they can. They're running 100 miles an hour. There's so much data coming at you, right? The demand upon a leader's head and heart and hands are overwhelming today. And I hear that very, very, very consistently. And what really the organizational constitution is designed to do is to have the leader not be the only one who's the quote daddy slash mommy, right? Keeping you, the kids, from fighting at the dinner table, right? And the reality is that once you get these rules truly well understood and people actually signed up to demonstrate them, they actually start to hold each other more accountable than some of us as bosses would have done anyway. Right. But the idea is that these leaders, the people that you have in your organizations today, team members in your organizations today, have been trained for years to be focused upon their own improvement and others. If others fall by the wayside, that's actually just part of the system.
Yeah.
And we want to break that. We simply want to say, wouldn't it be more fun? Wouldn't it be better to look at WD-40, to look at Assurance out of Chicago, to look at Ritz-Carlton, and to look at organizations. Starbucks has made a huge, huge rekindling of their culture over the last 7-8 years. That there's organizations that are actually thriving. In a recession, they thrived, and certainly have done so since, because they're tribal culture, their values-based culture, their positive culture won't let people, you know, kind of behave purely for their own good. And, you know, there's times when as I help leaders evolve to this, to get this kind of clarity, to announce the Constitution, to begin to live it, they're going to lose some players because the players just don't know how to behave in that new environment.
Right, right. But let me interrupt, Chris, because when you talk about, you know, doing the Constitution includes values and behaviors, I think there's going to be a lot of people out there here. Values. Yeah. We got those on our wall too. Respect, integrity, excellence, whatever that is. You know, everybody's got those, including the companies that end up, you know, doing horribly horrific ethical things, right? Ethical violations. So when you talk about values, obviously you're talking more than just let's pick a handful of those words and stick them on our wall. What, how can you craft these values in a way that they help, that they guide people and their behaviors?
Outstanding question. And it's really the root of how the culture actually evolves, how the leaders can get values as important as results. And the reality is what we want to do is to take the leader's comfort with performance clarity and maybe better accountability, right? But we measure and monitor performance like crazy in most of our organizations. And if we're going to set values, then we have to make those equally as measurable as our performance metrics. Now, that was an interesting challenge, which is yes. why I went to then, since values are maybe hard to get everyone to agree on, let's at least start. But instead of attempting to get everyone to live values, there's way too much variability that's going to happen there. Let's get to specific behaviors, because behaviors are observable, tangible, and measurable. So we move the kind of vagueness, right, out of the discussion around values. Now, we do want to have clients get very specific about what they mean. So let me share. This is a current client that I'm working with, and they just announced their values. It took them almost 3 months of doing some wordsmithing here. But one of their values is integrity. And the way they defined it is acting with virtue, sincerity, and truthfulness. So let's stop there for a second. That's a brilliant definition of integrity. I've heard integrity happens to be one of the most frequently selected values when I'm working with clients and they decide they actually should have some values in place, right?
Right.
This is a wonderful, tight, very clear description. But then they get to, how are we going to measure? We're actually going to do a twice a year survey where employees can rate their bosses on the degree to which they live these values. And in essence, it's how well do they model these behaviors? So the three behaviors are, I align my action with our values, which is cheating slightly, right? Because they're referring to the values in the statement, but that's okay. I am honest and do what I say I will do. That's very crisp and measurable. And the third bullet is, I take responsibility for my actions and learn from my mistakes. Now, they have five other values. They have three other behaviors each. Now we're getting to, right, an 18 to 20 list of behaviors. But if you think about how many performance metrics people deal with on a daily basis,
right,
there's dozens and sometimes hundreds. And so the trick is to, if we're going to make values as important as results, we have to make them measurable.
Right.
And we have to measure them and give people feedback, maybe even better than we do with performance feedback today.
Chris, this is mind-blowing because, again, I think, unfortunately, for so many people out there, this is going to be a completely new idea that, we should be measuring, you know, turn values into behaviors and then measure. Let's do an audit on whether or not we're living those behaviors, living those values. Yeah. And it's the old line, you know, if you want to improve something, measure it. If you want to enforce something, measure it. And if we're going to be measuring sales and profits and quality and safety and all these things, why shouldn't we score or evaluate each other or our leaders, certainly, in these areas? I think that's, I mean, on this show, I talk a lot about the big idea. That is the big idea.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's the root of the organizational constitution, because it's like, we're going to formulate these, but then by God, we're going to measure them. And we're going to have, if you imagine, what if you had, I tell leaders this all the time, what if you had people who consistently delivered on performance expectations while being great corporate citizens? And they're like, that's nirvana. That would be the perfect thing to have happen. He said, one of them said recently, I might be able to have fewer supervisors and managers. Mm. And I said, of course, because you're going to have people more naturally affiliated with the reason for being, right, for the organization. They love serving their customers. Right. They love their team members. It's not a bad thing. There's a bit of the love thing happening here, but I am from California. We can do that.
What part of California are you from originally, Chris?
I was born and raised just south of L.A. I was a beach bum. I surfed through my senior year in high school and still graduated. So it was Seal Beach.
Wow.
Orange County.
You probably don't know this. I was born in Redondo Beach.
Oh, is that right?
Grew up in Orange County, but I moved to the East Coast. Well, I got dragged to the East Coast by my dad when I was going into my senior year of high school. So,
oh, interesting.
I would never was a beach bum, really. But so we've got that commonality.
That's pretty cool.
So, Chris, let me wrap up on this question, though. So this is really good. I always like to challenge our listeners, like, okay, let's take something from this topic, from this guest, and get something really actionable so that, you know, we can anchor it and start to make some progress. So what can you challenge us to do right away?
You know, one of the things that I tell leaders is a soft start for this whole idea around an organizational constitution, making values measurable, is I say, just take your team. And if you haven't formalized ground rules, do some ground rules and make those ground rules observable, tangible, measurable. And one of the things that I find very often when I work with clients is that their leadership teams are typically siloed. And just for all the reasons we've talked about, if you have an exclusive performance focus, then that competition is going to, wow, it's going to be deep and wide. And so why don't we do some ground rules around sharing insights, around helping each other. Gary Ridge, who I interview for the book, is the president and CEO of the WD-40 companies and brought this process into his organization very, very, very early. And they have a tribal culture. And what he decided was critically important was that he didn't want people to make mistakes anymore. And everyone went, well, but I'm trying all day. But he said, we're going to have learning moments. And the transition from mistakes to learning moments is you're going to share what you learn so nobody else makes the same mistake. So it's ground rules like that that can transition from that, you know, Lone Ranger, independent, I win, you lose, to sharing information and to working more cooperatively. That alone can start to shift your culture.
And again, it's brilliant. And because it goes back to being measurable. I mean, you know, learning moments in the last 6 months, did Kevin share out one of his failures, one of his projects that didn't work out? Did we learn anything from him? It's great. I like that. Chris, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you and your work?
Well, you can find my videos and research and podcasts at drivingresultsthroughculture.com. I'm also very active on Twitter at SC Edmunds, but they can find all those links again at my website at drivingresultsthroughculture.com.
Perfect. All right, friends, you've just been mentored by workplace culture expert Chris Edmunds. Don't forget, you can get the links he just mentioned and the notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And you get Chris's book from amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. Until next time, please remember, leadership is about influence, not authority. We are all leaders. The question is, what kind of leader will you be?